The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy, engineer, producer, Tom Fairbanks, on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you to the program. My name, it's easy to remember, Buckmaster. It's the midweek edition, Wednesday, the 22nd of January, 2020. We're broadcast 2020. Yeah, that still seems kind of weird, doesn't it? 2020.
Well, if you can just see your way clearer, 2020 ought to be just fine.
We're broadcasting from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. We're on 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. We're so proud of that archive of programs stretching back 9 full years. That's almost bordering on an historic document going all the way back to January of 2011. buckmastershow.com. Check it out. The live line number 790-2040. Speaking of the live line, let's join now Crystal Ann Foster, the TUSD Governing Board newly elected president for the 2020 calendar year. Crystal was approved on a 4-1 vote earlier this month to become the president, her first time serving as the president of the TUSD board. However, she has been on the board for 7 years. Crystal, how are you?
Good morning. I'm good. Happy New Year. It's January. I can say that, right? Well,
yeah, you can still say Happy New Year when you haven't seen or talked to someone yet in the new year. So here we go. What's at the top of your agenda for as the governing board president?
The most important thing we have to do this year is our new strategic plan. I think we've been flailing in the last couple of years because the board and each board member hasn't really had a set direction, and we haven't had a shared understanding of where we're going with our work. And something that we did when I started as a board member, we started a strategic plan, and we had a plan from 2014 to 2019. And so that plan, we need to make sure, find out what did we accomplish with that. And then we need to set new goals with our community, and then we set a vision. And then it's not about individual board members really trying to triumph different issues or different agendas. It's about us all agreeing that this is the work that we're committed to and that we move forward with each action that we take.
Are you going to move forward with this new family life curriculum, which of course includes sex education? Is that now going to be resolved in 2020?
I would hope so. That's what I'm committed to do. We have a curriculum. The vote back in, I think that was back in November. Rather than voting, we said we needed more. We needed to see more information. We asked Dr. Trujillo to work on a professional development plan to let's show the parents what you would have curriculum-wise if you opted out. Well, I should say it's an opt-in curriculum, and so we know what that is, but parents don't know what would I have if I didn't opt in, and we want to share that with the community. We also want to have an opportunity like a conference, if you will, where parents can come. We have conferences for anti-bullying, and we have conferences for our African-American parents and for our Mexican-American parents, and so we'd like to have that kind of a conference where you can come and review the curriculum and actually attend a class of a particular grade level. And so we wanted to have all of that kind of work in place before we approved the family life curriculum. My goal, I've shared this with Dr. Trujillo, is I would really like to have, most of the time those classes happen in May after standardized testing is over and all of that. And I would really hope we could make this happen for this group of students this May. I don't want to rush the work and have it done not correctly. And so I've asked, and I'm just one board member, I've asked that hopefully we could approve that before May. And if that doesn't happen, then hopefully for sure we'll get this off the ground for the next school year.
How's the feeling on the board? Bruce Burke has taken over for Dr. Stegeman, who resigned. What is there a feeling of camaraderie? Is that taking it a little too far or what?
Oh, I think there's a focus. We're definitely more efficient. We're more focused. We're Mr. Burke brings experience from before, so I'm so grateful for his appointment because he didn't have to, the learning curve wasn't as steep. And he was meeting with Dr. Trujillo from the ground running. He got appointed and he started meeting with people to catch up with the work and what we're doing. So I think he brings a gentle, calm focus into improving the district. So I welcome him, absolutely.
What is your thought on the governor's proposal to put some more money into education and maybe get some of the facilities that have been so aging in TUSD and other districts, getting them at least a start on restoring them back up to where they should be?
Oh, I applaud that. Whenever the governor talks about putting money into our public school system, then I applaud that. I think it's like you said, getting us started, because you know we have had cuts, drastic cuts for the last decade or so, and so it will only be a couple pebbles in that bucket of need right now. But we're never going to say, you know, no to those funds. We absolutely will be grateful and use those funds accordingly. And then it's our job as the school board to make sure that our community understands and our legislature understands the other needs that are there. Because I think what we'll qualify for right now with the budget that he's proposed will only be a couple buildings, and we know we have over 80 buildings, and we're District 1, right? So we're the oldest district here in the state, and our buildings are old, and they absolutely need to be updated.
David Lujan will join me here in studio. Actually, David will be on the live line Friday. David's pushing an initiative that would tax the wealthiest Arizonans, and that extra money, Crystal Foster, would go to education. Have you had a chance to take a look at that initiative?
This is the Invest in Ed
Initiative
2.0.
Yes. That's right.
Absolutely. I'm planning to go to a meeting on Friday so that I am engaged, and we have a meeting here in Tucson at XO Coffee where volunteers and supporters who want to get on board to understand how to help with that initiative. But we'll be there and hit the ground running. We have a lot of signatures to collect. I have to say that was probably my biggest disappointment in 2018, and how the Supreme Court rejected that proposal the first time. And I think that was some dirty politics. And that deflated me a whole lot in the whole Red for Ed movement. And so I applaud Mr. Lujan and all of the organizers, AEA and everybody, for getting back on board to bring this initiative to the voters.
All right, before we wrap it up with you, this report about one quarter of teaching positions in Arizona are vacant. This is very troubling. It doesn't seem like we're making much progress. Maybe we have in TUSD, but a lot of districts around the state still have a lot of openings.
Amen to that. We sure do. The last one I saw is we're 49th when it comes to teacher pay. And teachers can only sacrifice so many years when they start in this profession, and then they have to take care of their families and themselves first. And if you can't financially afford to be a teacher, I mean, that's what we're seeing. We're seeing at the universities a drastic decline in students who are going into teaching. And how can they do that and repay student loans? It's just, we must address the student retention. I applaud Kathy Hoffman for start having a new position for teacher retention in Arizona, because she sees that that's a statewide issue too. And people come to our board meetings and advocate for salary increases, and absolutely, yes, across the board, there's many, many employees that need more money, and we do the best that we can, but we must come together and tell our story, advocate for our public schools, and really push our legislature and support our legislators who, in this upcoming cycle, who are ready to invest in our education.
All right, Crystal Foster, good catching up with you. Crystal, the new president of the TUSD Governing Board, good luck in your role in 2020, Crystal. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, fine. Crystal Foster with us. Upcoming, we'll be talking with a longtime educator, Rex Scott. Mr. Scott is running as a Democrat in the open supervisorial seat in District Number 1. That's coming up here in a couple of minutes. But right now, I want to tell everybody about my favorite bakery in town, and that's Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. My goodness, what a beautiful job owner and chief baker Steve does, not only with the Kringle, but those baked goods. I don't know. I have just become so attached to what he is doing now. Tom, jump in here. His peanut butter cookies just seem to resonate with me. And first of all, they're the size of a Frisbee. I know. Which, I mean, yeah, come on. You're going to get your money's worth for that peanut butter cookie, but I'm really into them right now.
I appreciate the fact that it's peanut butter.
Yes.
I like peanut butter by itself.
Sure.
I'm not a big fan of combining peanut butter with chocolate and stuff.
Right, right.
But those peanut butter cookies, ooh, that's the ticket.
There you go. Thank you, Tom Fairbanks, for that endorsement. Mona's DanishBakery.com. They're located the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Open right now for lunch. And of course, breakfast is served. The grill's all fired up and ready to go at 6:30 each morning. So check it out. Right now, we will check out the Buckmaster Show partners. We'll hear from them, the people that make our program possible. In the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back. Rex Scott is with me in studio. He's next. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
Biosphere 2's new ocean tour takes you behind the scenes of the largest experimental ocean in the world, researching solutions for the global coral reef crisis. Other exciting tours include The Amazing 30-Year History, a family tour for families with kids 10 and under, and the inspiring Under the Glass Tour, one of the 50 must-see wonders of the world. Visit UA Biosphere 2 today. Explore the future. Online giving for coral reef research and information about tours and more at biosphere2.org.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and it is now time for Your Vote, Your Voice. These are our candidate segments, and not only here on the Buckmaster Show, but the morning show, Zach's show, now called Tipping Point. So all our local programs, when we do candidate interviews, we have kind of a clearinghouse now of all of the interviews. Of course, I'll have them at my website, buckmastershow.com, but all of them from the other shows and my show will be at kvoi.com. We again turn our focus to the Pima County Supervisorial Race, District 1. That is the district that covers the foothills. It's my district. Allie Miller, after two terms, has decided she will not be standing for re-election. And so we have pretty much a wide open race going on the Democratic side. We have Rex Scott. Rex is a longtime educator. He's with me in studio. At 24 years old, he began really a political career serving two terms on the Athens, Ohio City Council in that college town where the University of Ohio is based. Rex, good to see you.
Bill, happy to be here with you and Tom and your listeners. Thank you very much for the invitation.
How is the campaign going? Have you had some endorsements? Are folks rallying to your side?
We are really pleased with the amount of support that we've gotten within the district. I've been an educator in this area since 1991 and have always lived most of the time that I've lived here in District 1, and two of the schools that I've served as a leader are within District 1. So I've already made connections with thousands of families through the work that I've done on behalf of their children. But we definitely have also been endorsed by a lot of community leaders and leaders within the Democratic Party. I'm very proud that former Congressman Ron Barber has endorsed us. We've also been endorsed by Dr. Randy Fries, who is a state representative in Legislative District 9. And I'm also pleased that key independents like business leader Steve Lynn, who was once the chair of the Independent Redistricting Commission, and former Flowing Wells and TUSD Superintendent Dr. John Petticone, who's also an independent, have endorsed us. And if people want to see the statements of support from the various community leaders who've endorsed us, they can go to our website, Scott for Supervisor, that's Scott, the number four, supervisor.com, and visit the endorsements page.
The district has traditionally been a Republican district. What do the numbers show? Are things changing?
The district is very representative of the Arizona electorate as a whole. The margin between registered Republicans and registered Democrats has narrowed by 40% since 2016. And the fastest growing segment of the District 1 electorate, just like in Arizona, just like the nation, is independents. There are 54,000 Republicans, 46,000 Democrats, and 41,000 independents. Because of the service that I've already given to the district as a teacher and administrator, I've already made connections with thousands of families within the district. And that really is the first responsibility of any political candidate, is to build trust and build rapport with the folks that they hope to represent. And that's going to be something that is going to be my biggest job. I'm going to run a very vigorous grassroots campaign, knock on thousands of doors, and look for every opportunity to build that trust and rapport with the people who I would like to represent.
Rex Scott, would you like to outline a few of your platform items?
Well, I think the most important thing after you work to establish trust and rapport is to tell people that you intend to be an accountable and transparent public servant. In the last job that I had as a principal, I had a practice bill of giving a copy of my cover letter that I had used when I applied for the position to my staff at the beginning of every year, because I wanted them to hold me accountable for being the same person that I said that I would be when I applied for the position as their principal. And that's what I invite the people of District 1 to do, is listen to what I say and do during this campaign. And then if I'm blessed to be elected to be your supervisor, hold me accountable to be the same person in office that I said I would be during the campaign. The three adjectives that I most wanted applied to me as a leader have always been communicative, visible, and supportive. Communicative means not just always reaching out to people to share with them what's going on in county government. It also means listening to understand much more than you speak to be understood. Being visible means not just being everywhere in the community during the campaign and after you're elected, and holding town halls and seeking ways of interacting with the public. It also means being fully present whenever you're talking to somebody. And then being supportive means not just representing the needs and the concerns of people in the district. It also means talking to the people who are most affected by a decision before you cast any votes. The other thing that I wanted to point out is that because District 1 is so representative of the electorate as a whole, it's important for me to point out to voters that I've been a member of both parties. You mentioned that I was a city councilman in my hometown in Ohio, and I was a Republican during that time.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you've always been a Democrat.
I have not. I was a Republican for the first 19 years that I was a registered voter, including the 3.5 years that I was a councilman in Athens, Ohio.
Uh-huh.
Then I was an independent for 4 years, and I've been a Democrat for the last 15 years. I've also had the benefit of leading a lot of diverse school staffs and working on behalf of even more diverse student and parent populations. So I know the value of collaborative leadership and honoring all voices and making sure that all voices are heard before you make a decision. And that's the commitment that I'd make to the very changing electorate within Supervisorial District 1.
Supervisor Miller was so, she had that, some might say, a one-note, fix the roads. That was her big item. What do you put at the top of your list?
I think the most important thing to remember as a local official, and I've been one, so this is something that I think about right away. Most of the work that you do is not super glamorous and doesn't deal with glitzy topics. It is the responsibility to make sure that every department within county government is operated at the highest level of efficiency and that customer service is the greatest priority. So all of those services that are provided to the residents of Pima County through departments like transportation, like the Parks Department, the Health Department, all of the departments under the aegis of county government, your responsibility as a supervisor is to make sure that you are overseeing those departments, providing them with clear direction and goals and supports so that they're meeting the needs of everybody within Pima County. That's your first priority, is making sure that essential county services are provided. Safety it has to be a high priority. And so I'd want to ensure that law enforcement and other first responders that rely on their budgets from the Board of Supervisors are adequately supported. Obviously, roads are a big issue within District 1. We have more unincorporated land than any of the five supervisorial districts, and our roads are certainly in need of repair and ongoing maintenance. I was pleased when the Board of Supervisors recently passed the PAYGO program, which will bring all the roads in the county.
The pay-as-you-go program.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
It'll bring all the roads up to par by 2030, but preventive maintenance needs to be a piece of that program so that they don't return to the condition that they're in. And again, that's a function of leadership to make sure that the transportation department is following that program. And the board will be responsible for prioritizing the roads that need to be repaired and how to repair them each year as part of the annual budgeting process.
Only a few seconds left. And again, you would like people to go to learn more about you at your website.
Yes. And it is, as I said, scott4supervisor.com. That's Scott, the number 4, supervisor.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Pima Rex. And we have the beginnings of a Facebook page. I didn't want to be a Facebook user when I was a school administrator, so I'm learning the platform, but we have a Facebook page at Pima Rex as well.
All right, Rex Scott, thank you very much. Rex Scott, Democrat candidate, Pima County District Number 1 for the Board of Supervisors. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Bill.
It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We'll be right back after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Biosphere 2's new ocean tour takes you behind the scenes of the largest experimental ocean in the world, researching solutions for the global coral reef crisis. Other exciting tours include the amazing 30-year history, a family tour for families with kids 10 and under, and the inspiring Under the Glass tour, one of the 50 must-see wonders of the world. Visit UA Biosphere 2 today. Explore the future. Online giving for coral reef research and information about tours and more at biosphere2.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster, and you know how I love to travel. I've always searched for that new destination or travel experience that makes life so special. And I looked to Ryan Hansen of Bon Voyage Travel for insight on current travel trends.
This is Ryan Hansen, and I'd like to personally invite your listeners to the Bon Voyage Travel Showcase. Over 40 travel partners will be on hand to answer all the individual travel questions that you have. Bill, you and I are going to team up for a joint presentation to help your listeners discover all the world has to offer.
I'm looking forward to it, Ryan.
talking about the inspiration behind my lifetime of travel to more than 100 countries.
Join us on February 16th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Hilton El Conquistador for Bon Voyage's free travel showcase.
And look no further. The folks at Bon Voyage will help you plan that perfect journey.
Be sure to visit bvtravel.com to RSVP.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. I'm just so honored to have a team like Green Things and these great partners that we have. Green Things over at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. They're, of course, synonymous with beautiful plants. They have greenhouse after greenhouse of beautiful things. But there's more now on the 13-acre site. There's Zocalo. And in fact, there's a whole Zocalo Village. These are five shops just loaded with merchandise that Jan and Jack, the owners, handpick. They travel to Mexico. They meet with the artisans, and they bring back beautiful things, beautiful desks, beautiful pieces of furniture, chairs, not only from Mexico, but really all over Latin America and Europe. Let me give you two websites to keep in mind, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Thanks again to Green Things for everything they do. And thanks again to Dr. Jeff Silvertooth. Jeff is the Buckmaster contributor on agriculture. Not only am I just delighted as we now, Jeff, begin our 10th year here on the radio. That means we concluded 9 full years in December. But people like yourself, experts in their field, we've put together a team of contributors, over 24 contributors, and you're one of them. And your area, we've called upon you, is agriculture. And it's so good just to visit maybe every quarter, every couple of months, to find out what's going on in an important field like yours.
Right. I appreciate the chance to do that, Bill.
Professor,
congratulations on your 10 years.
Thank you. Yeah, beginning year number 10. Professor Silvertooth has been with the University of Arizona College of Agriculture and Life Sciences since 1987. Jeff, before when you joined, it was just College of Agriculture, wasn't it?
It was the College of Agriculture when I first joined.
Yeah.
Right. And it transitioned over, I think, in the early 90s.
To bring in the life sciences.
That's right.
Which is very important in its own right.
That's right. And it was primarily to recognize and embrace the more basic set of molecular side of agricultural science, both with regard to plants and animals, and demonstrate the fact that it's a very broad field of study in terms of life sciences. Also, there are social science aspects of our work in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences as well. And so it goes beyond just the biological components as the college is being described that way.
Jeff is currently the Associate Dean and Director for Extension and Economic Development, where he provides overall leadership and administrative and personnel management for the Arizona Cooperative Extension. He also serves as the Associate Director for the Arizona Experimental Station. Jeff, I was so pleased that the Arizona Daily Star, I think this ran, the piece ran over the holidays, really getting into some of the, getting into the detail about the University of Arizona being a land-grant institution and that connection with the Arizona Cooperative Extension. The extension's been around, what, 157 years?
Well, the land-grant mission has been around 157 years. That's since 1862. Mm-hmm. It was the Morrill Act was passed, which formed these land-grant institutions, which the University of Arizona is the land-grant institution for the state of Arizona. Cooperative extension, the efforts of extension began early with those land-grant institutions, and that is to take the university out into the state to the people and bring science to bear on practical problems. It was brought into law at the Smith-Lever Act in 1914, and that became an official network of a cooperative extension system, which means cooperative means a cooperative venture with the federal government through the Smith-Lever Act, state funding from the state legislators, and also then county funding county partnerships. So we have offices associated with University of Arizona through Cooperative Extension in every county in the state in Arizona.
Really? Each county.
And
yeah.
several of our Native American reservations as well. But that's all embodied with the land grant mission, a land grant structure. You know, the University of Arizona tends to be rather Tucson-centric, but in fact, we have statewide responsibilities, and that's what we carry out in Cooperative Extension. So it's a pleasure to be able to serve in that capacity with the University of Arizona. I've been associated with this organization for the entire 33 years that I've been here at the U of A, and we do have this extensive network in the state.
What's that outreach like to the consumer?
Well, hopefully it's positive, you know, and that's where the economic development part comes into my line of responsibilities. If our work is doing well and helping people with their lives, and in many facets of our work, whether it's 4-H youth development or it's agricultural natural resources or the broad range of programs going on in family, consumer, and health sciences, it should benefit people in their lives both directly in terms of the aesthetics in their life as well as the material benefits. So, for example, we hope to make agricultural systems more efficient, help to provide good information to help people do a better job agronomically, we say, or production-wise, both with animals and plants, and also, too, economically. And now, so to really look at the work we do with families, ideally, you know, take something like an oral health program, education of oral health or diabetes prevention. If the education is effective, it can have a positive impact on people's lives, not only in terms of their health and their well-being, but also in terms of their family economics, family finances, in terms of using the right kind of medications, taking the right kind of approaches. And so that should be a positive benefit to people. And you can go up and down the line, Bill. I could be glad to talk about the merits of the benefits that we do provide and we intend to provide with the objectives of our programs.
I want to transition to an area that is really of concern in your business. One in three farmers, Jeff Silvertooth, in the United States is 65 or older, and many, many small farms across the United States are closing because the proprietors, the people that own it, the older people, they've been successful, but now they're trying to decide what to do with the farm. They try to hand it down to family, and family doesn't want anything to do with agriculture. This is a serious problem.
It is. And it's not new. I've been in this business for over 50 years, and I've been working professionally for 44, 45 years.
Was it starting when you first got into it?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, this is a trend, if you look into it, it's been taking place in the United States since World War II.
So it's a post-World War II trend.
Yes, sir. And it primarily parallels the urbanization of America. You know, we've transitioned from, you know, 150 years ago to a very agrarian, rural type of population to a very urban-based population. Over 90% of the population is urban-based, and over 90% of the population in Arizona for sure is urban-based. We're a good example of it right here. A lot of open spaces, but in terms of the population residency, it's in the cities. And so what you've seen, Bill, is a migration over the years, or what we've all seen throughout the course of my career, my lifetime, is watching a migration from young people leaving the farm, going to the cities, going to college quite often, looking for another life beyond the farm. And as a result of that, I remember in the 70s, the average age of the American farmer was about the same as mine. Uh-huh. And has tracked along the same. Now, I'm 66 years old today, and here along my peers, my age group, we represent this generation in agriculture. And we commonly turn and look to see where the next generation is coming from. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, Bill, you asked this in my teaching of classes at the U of A, which in this capacity I'm not doing now, but I've taught a lot of classes in crop science, soil and water science. And it used to be 25, 30 years ago, Bill, we'd have about 70% of the students in my classes had some background on the farm or in agricultural settings.
There was a family connection.
There was a family connection, or they were working for a family in a rural community.
Okay.
And now it's probably about maybe 20% of those students. It's shifted where most of the students coming into the field today are from urban centers. And that's probably our future. But it's a heck of a transition for kids that haven't grown up on a farm, and they really have some kinds of mystical views sometimes and some kind of dreamy views about what it is to go into agriculture. But there's our core and our base for the future. It must be, because we have to have people to go out and do this. You just don't pick people off the street to go out and run these kind of farms that we need today.
Well, what happens to these farms? And I need to take a break here, but simply put, the heirs to the family farm, if they sell it off, they sell the land that could be developed into housing or whatever, or right. They would sell to a big group.
There's two things that happen. It depends where depends where it is.
Okay.
But this is one of the reasons why we see larger and larger farms that get to be labeled as large corporate farms.
Right.
That's exactly why. So when there's a group of families in a community that are liquidating because they don't have anyone to carry on the family farm, mm-hmm. they sell out to someone who is staying there. So there mm-hmm. are families that do stay. There's families that I work with in Arizona that are consistent five-generation families on the farm and ranch mm-hmm. in Arizona. There's quite a lot of them, actually. But that's what's happening. And so you see this consolidation of land and of operations. But you still see people out there on the land, but the ownership is getting consolidated quite often. That's basically a function of necessity. And that's not bad, actually, because you still have good people running those operations. They care about the land. They're good stewards of the mm-hmm, land, mm-hmm. and they're good farmers. They're good operators.
All right. We're going to have more with Jeff Silvertooth, but right now we're going to take our break on the Buckmaster Show. When we come back with Jeff, we're going to get an update on what's going on with hemp. The first harvest of hemp has come in. We're going to hear from Jeff on how are they doing. That's right after we take a break in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-7000. 6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion of the program presented by our fine sponsors over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. We send a lot of our listeners here on the Buckmaster Show over to that lovely area of the Land of Enchantment. There's so much to do over there. One of the nation's first national monuments is really just north of Silver City. Jeff Silvertooth with me in studio. Jeff, do you know what that monument would be?
That would be the Gila Wilderness?
That would be the Gila Cliff Dwellings National
Cliff Dwellings,
Monument,
yeah.
Which is one of the first. It goes back to early in the 1900s.
Yeah.
What a great location, though. It's just north of Silver City. That's pretty country over there.
Oh, it's beautiful. Outstanding, yeah.
For information about Silver City, which is only a three-hour drive from Tucson, approximately 3 hours, visit southwestnewmexico.org. There will be ideas there on how to recreate and all sorts of suggestions about great places to stay. Jeff Silvertooth is with me in studio. He is our Buckmaster contributor on agriculture, and he's been with the University of Arizona since 1987, UA College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. He's currently Associate Dean and Director for Extension and Economic Development at the U of A, and he is so involved with the Arizona Cooperative Extension. Jeff, I mentioned before the break that we have talked in previous episodes here on the Buckmaster Show about hemp production, which is now really coming up full bore in the state, isn't it?
The first crop, the first plantings are coming along here right now. And just to kind of reset this, perhaps for your listeners, mm-hmm. Bill, I might say that we're growing hemp, which is Cannabis sativa, it's the same genus and species as medicinal marijuana. But it's a different strain. It's lower in THC, and it's grown primarily for the oil and fiber products, and now also the cannabinoid extracts, the CBD-type materials that can come out of that, perhaps.
With that market, it's just booming right now.
Right. So, and certain elements of that market are booming, and this is a legal provision now that we have based on the 2018 Farm Bill, the U.S. Farm Bill that was passed in 2 years ago, provided a possibility for states to opt in for the production of industrial hemp, not medical marijuana or any other form. So the state of Arizona did that through the Arizona Department of Agriculture. It's being regulated through them. So farmers have been this past year, 2019, planting the first crops of hemp. So it's entirely experimental. And we are a little behind in our efforts as far as our experiment station and our college efforts in terms of our applied field research to get ahead of this, because we had to get a license and approval through the attorneys and then through the state.
Yeah, you were playing catch-up here.
We're playing catch-up.
Yeah.
And so right now, in direct answer to your question, the first crop is starting to come in. And just the past few days, it's turned out to be there's some alarming aspects of the results that are coming in.
Tell me about it.
We're always worried about yields and the capacity to produce a crop in the markets.
Right.
But the other thing that has to be for industrial hemp, see, these cannabis sativa plants or marijuana plants or hemp plants are going to carry all the cannabinoids. There's over like 500 compounds that are common in a cannabis sativa plant that can be analyzed directly. There's a whole range of chemical compound types, and over 100 of those are cannabinoids. THC, which is the ingredient that gives the psychotropic effects associated with medical marijuana, that's just one of the compounds that's in that plant, but it's supposed to be less than 0.3% of the plant material of that THC. What's happening is 41%, as of last week, 41% of the crop that's coming in Arizona has been in excess of 0.3%.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, that's right. And so what's happening, it's hitting these growers pretty hard because they're having to destroy the crop. You know, they put all the effort into planting, to production, and ready to go, and now it comes out and it gets tested and they can't go. So it opens up a plethora of questions about.
So they're having to destroy that.
Yeah,
material.
You can't take it to market, you know. You know, there's probably a lot of people out wanting to help sample plants, but, you know.
Oh, my goodness. So where is this going on? What is the Arizona growing region for hemp?
primarily southern Arizona, the same places we have most of our crop production in the state, mm-hmm. the alluvial valleys of southern Arizona. So I've seen hemp fields all the way from the Gila River Valley up around Safford and all the way out west to Yuma. I was just in some hemp plots last week in Yuma at the Yuma Ag Center, but there are some in the Yuma Valley. So they're kind of scattered. Mostly it's eastern Arizona, the high elevations of the Gila River Valley, some in central Arizona around Pinal County, a little bit of Maricopa, and then out around Yuma that I know of. I haven't really tracked every field.
This one in the ground when? What is the growing season for
that's
this?
That's a great question because we really don't know. Agronomically, that's one of the things we need to figure out. What are the optimum dates of planting, optimum dates of termination? How do you manage a crop towards harvest? What's the optimum way to manage so that you can minimize THC concentrations but yet maximize yields? You know, these are all basic agronomic questions that we have. And to be honest with you, we don't know. We're trying to catch up and figure this out. But a lot of the growers, everybody went out and planted this year, kind of taking a chance. It was a gamble, a real roll of the dice, which farmers are prone to do. That's how they get ahead.
Sure.
You take a chance, and sometimes you hit, and you learn, and you move forward, and you get into the market before everyone else. But there's going to be a lot of we're on a steep learning curve right now with this industrial hemp, I think.
So now it's kind of back, Jeff Silver, to the drawing boards when you've got that, you know, more than 40% that is not going to be usable. I mean, I guess now you're trying to figure out why did it go, why did that percentage spike like that?
Yeah, exactly. So the questions that you come up with, and, you know, I've been asked about this several times and don't know the answer to it, but it could be genetics. It could be interaction. I tell you what it is. That's just a broad basket, but it's an interaction in genetics and environment one way or the other. Now, environment means our management as well. So could it be the way we're managing for irrigation? Could it be planting day?
Well, I was just going to say, could there be... could you be putting too much water?
Could be.
On it.
Could be. It could be one of many things, and it's hard to say at this point. But that's where we have to go back to the drawing board and our folks in the field working with the growers to try to figure this out.
Is there money in it, though?
Potentially.
You're saying potentially. Yeah.
Potentially. You know, you always have a situation with any crop where there's a market. And, of course, in agriculture, that's an interesting thing, too. We have zero control on the markets. We're price takers, not price makers. Mm-hmm. If you're selling automobiles, well, you set the price for the autos or the product that you're selling. Agriculture, you produce a crop, and you have to take it into the ag market, and you hope for the best. And they can vary a lot. So there's a potential market out there. And that's what everybody's trying to hit. And that's why lots of folks want to jump into it early. If they can get into that market before anyone else and figure it out, then they can capture an advantage.
But acreage-wise, it's still a very small.
Yes, it's very small.
It's a very.
I don't
small.
Anticipate it growing rapidly into a large acreage crop, but it could possibly grow into a stable piece of our crop mixing system, which hopefully it can.
Well, this is why you and your team are paid the big bucks. Now, this is why you're going to try to figure out what's going on here.
Right.
And as you say, this is a learning curve.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's exactly why we are here. And that's why it goes back to that land-grant mission you asked about earlier.
Yeah.
We're here to help work with people as these types of enterprises come into the marketplace, into the production setting, is to work out these very questions that we're discussing here today, Bill, and work that out with growers and try to go back to that economic impact that's positive.
Well, the next time we have you on the show, we'll get another update on how the crop is doing, the hemp crop. Jeff Silvertooth, always a pleasure, and hope 2020 continues to go very well for you, sir. Thank you.
Likewise, Bill. Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. The Buckmaster Show, wrapping it up here, midweek edition. On behalf of Professor Silvertooth and Tom Fairbanks, doing such a fine job on the other side of the glass, we hope you have a great afternoon. We've got the Money Show coming up with Dave Ramsey, the Dave Ramsey Show, very popular show. I'm always amazed when Dave talks about the student debt that some of these kids are running up. 100,000 or more? Can't believe it. He'll talk about that and more, I'm sure. Have a great afternoon.